Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, is David Vermeil. How you doing, buddy?
I've been better, man. It's a tough time for the Heat fan base, I think. So there's a lot to break down today.
The Chris Bosh saga just continues to get messier and messier. And recently at the Miami Heat's media day, Pat Riley mentioned that the team will not be seeking to reinstate Chris Bosh, that they're basically moving on, that his career with the Heat is over. And according to reports, well, not according to reports, according to Chris Bosh and his documentary series for Uninterrupted, he found out about that through the media, through his phone, basically. And he threw his iPhone down and stormed out of the room, and he was very upset with that. And in his latest documentary episode, he said, "That doesn't mean that my NBA career is over. There are 29 other teams. It's a whole league. One team does not make up the opinion of everything." We've heard for a while now that Bosh is not willing to just live with the opinion of the Heat doctors, that he's seeking opinions from other doctors. Now maybe he'll be seeking opinions from other teams if he can. Chris Bosh is going to be trying to play for 29 other teams now. I mean, is there a way that Bosh can even, like, get onto another team? Like, I just, how does the rest of this play out?
I mean, at heart, I think there just seems to be, like, this weird lack of communication. If we believe Bosh, then Riley has been completely default and not contacting his star player. He's already arguably pushed away both LeBron in 2014 and Dwayne Wade earlier this summer. And if you believe that that's the case, then it seems likely that Riley has also kind of pushed away Chris Bosh as well. So there's this whole communication issue at heart here. And if that's the case, then I don't know whether they can come to some kind of agreement moving forward, whether or not Riley and Bosh can actually agree on what happens next. And that's what we heard in Media Day, right, is that they were going to start planning their future together, you know, that they were at least – that there was some kind of level of communication there. That's not the case, apparently.
Yeah, you know, Bosh claims – Riley says that he's been trying to reach out to Chris Bosh in his camp, and apparently Bosh has been ignoring his phone calls and emails and stuff. So,
right. I mean, that's the confusing part here, because clearly someone's lying, and we just don't know who it is. You know, reporters are saying that Bosh has informed them that he hasn't heard from anybody on the team in months, not since the original diagnosis early 2016. Riley and the front office are saying, "We've tried calling his team, his agents, him via text, via email, by phone, no response whatsoever." So those two statements clearly don't jive, and obviously somebody's lying. So that's a whole other issue. But as far as whether or not Bosh is able to move on to another team, you would think that there'd be some kind of a communication level in place there where he could say, "Look, if you don't want me here in Miami for whatever reason, at least try trading me to another team." But that doesn't seem likely to happen either, because if, you know, that puts Riley on the spot there, because he's the one saying that his career is done because of an ongoing medical issue. And if that's the case, no team would want him. But I guess according to Chris Bosh, he's basically accusing the Heat doctors of malpractice. He thinks that opinion is wrong, and he wants to seek Miami's waiver so that at some point he can elect to find another team that might be able to pay him for his services while still getting paid by the Miami Heat, because his contract will continue on the books if he's found that he's healthy and able to play again.
Yeah, and Pat Riley, by at Media Day saying that Bosh is done with the Heat, that kind of came off as a bully tactic. I mean, maybe that's strong, but he's basically said, you know, "Bosh, your career's over. That's it. I told the entire world right now that your career is over." And so that really limits what Chris Bosh can do. But it also puts Riley in a corner, because now all of a sudden you've completely cut down any trade value that Bosch has. Nobody, you can't call any team now if you're Pat Riley and say, do you want Chris Bosch's contract? Because every team is going to be like, you just told everybody that his career is over. Why would I bother trading anything for that? Like, or even if they did, like, his value is down. You're not going to get a first-round pick for Chris Bosch. I mean, you get some super highly protected second rounder. Like, you might have to just give him away for nothing, you know? And because at this point, why would any team trade anything and take on that risk? So it does seem like the only option, if Bosch is going to get on another team, it's going to be through a buyout or you know, the waiver process from the Heat. And if that's the case, then Miami is going to continue to pay that contract, just like you said, which substantially hurts what, like, their roster flexibility. Now you might as well just keep Bosch on the roster, right? Like, the only reason you would waive him is, number one, the distraction, number two, the obviously the roster spot, but
right,
it's not like you can really get anything in return for him.
Yeah, that doesn't seem likely. I mean, I wonder if part of the report that Riley made on Media Day about his career basically being over in Miami was maybe they felt that he might be able to play, but not necessarily at the level that they're paying him for. Like, if you're paying him as much as Miami has over the last two seasons, you expect a full regular season worth of performances, right, plus, you know, having a significant impact on a playoff push. But I mean, at this point, maybe they're just, you know, they're on the books to pay him $26 million or roughly around that amount. Mm-hmm. He's not nearly worth that kind of money at this point. So it's a little difficult for them to say they could justify paying him that much, knowing that there's the potential for him to develop an ongoing medical issue that's going to take him out again at some point during the regular season, just as it has during the last 2 years.
Unfortunately for Bosch, I mean, saying that there's 29 other teams and everything, he can't go get the opinion of 29 other NBA teams. You just can't, like, you can't walk into a facility and say, hey, where are your doctors at? Like, check me out.
But,
you know, as much
there is,
what?
Sorry, I was going to say, there isn't an opinion that we can't agree on, and that's the value of SeatGeek.
That's absolutely right. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. I'm assuming that you were trying to lead us into this ad spot, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, for me, it's always been, you know what? I hate just, like, researching anything. Like, anything that has to do with my, like, I don't like researching, like, plane flights deals. Like, I don't like doing that. I don't like looking for hotel rates. I didn't like looking for tickets for concerts or sporting events. I just didn't like any of it. It was just too confusing. SeatGeek is perfect because it takes all the work out of it for you. It's the smartest way to buy and sell tickets. It's, if you've ever tried buying tickets for something, you're like, okay, well, do I try to go to this third party and get a deal here? Do I wait until an hour before the show to try to get something on a good deal? SeatGeek makes everything easy for you. They've come along. They've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for you to buy and sell your tickets. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites. So you don't have to go to this site and that site. You just go to SeatGeek. It's the one site you need. And ensuring that you get the best possible deal, SeatGeek does all of the work. You save time, you save money. SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. How do you do that? Well, to get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code. Then enter the promo code LOHEAT, that's LOHEAT, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today. Bosch saying specifically 29 teams and all this, I mean, I think the underlying message is that he's not going down without a fight, right? He's not going to make this easy. He's not going to just medically, he's not going to just retire and take his contract off the books and just have insurance pay it for the Heat. Like, that's not, Bosch is not going to allow that to happen. And there's definitely a resentment here. So it's part, he wants to keep his career going, but he's also not going to make that easy for Miami, it doesn't sound like. And that's the unfortunate part. So this is just going to keep getting messier.
I think he's, you know, he's basically delivered a very fatal blow to Miami's credibility, I think, if you believe what he's saying is true. And we've talked, you know, in recent weeks about the PR move and whether or not it's tilting towards Bosch or tilting towards the Heat, and it seems to change daily. You know, if you had asked me a week ago when Riley made the announcement, you'd think, well, after our third blood clot situation, clearly Riley's doing Bosch a favor by, you know, not allowing him to play for the Heat. He's trying to basically save his life, and you can still make that argument. But then Bosch retaliates by saying that he hasn't gotten a call or a text, that he heard about the news of the third blood clot situation from his wife, who had broken the news to him. And then he followed it up by saying, I mean, it's a business. This is a direct quote. We understand now. We always say those things. But if you say certain things to a person, you win championships and you have these moments, you don't want to find out things through the media. So it's obviously he's taken it very personally. And, you know, he continues to reinforce the idea that the team has phased him out and hasn't been in communication with him. So it's a very difficult process to witness as a Heat fan.
I mean, it's got to be somewhere in the middle, but it's impossible to tell. I mean, now we're analyzing the communications between Bosch and the Heat front office, and we only know what we're told. But it's just, to me, this Heat team, during the Big Three era, during the four straight finals, was one of the most buttoned-up franchises in the league. I mean, it was, of all the front offices, it was there with the Spurs, with just professionalism and how it kept everything in-house, and there's no distractions, and how it treated its players and employees well. And that completely has come unraveled now. I mean, this team that has been buttoned up and handled everything in-house now, everything is out in the media. Everything is out in front of us, and just all the gross guts and goo and everything about this whole process is just out there. And between LeBron James leaving, then Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, all of this has been handled very publicly. And it's rare for this team. And I think that it really does hurt, you know, the reputation of the Heat, the reputation of Pat Riley. I think this whole process has really hurt it, because they're no longer that buttoned-up professional franchise. I mean, this is like something Heat fans don't want to hear this, but this is like a New York Knicks type thing. I mean, this is Sacramento Kings stuff. Like, this is just really just low-level front offices that are operating in front of the media, in front of everybody, as opposed to handling everything in-house. This is not, to me, that's one of the biggest takeaways out of this, is like, what's going on with this whole Heat culture thing? Like, this is very, very, like, bad for, to me, the brand of the team.
Well, it's also kind of deflecting attention from what's happening on the floor, you know. Yeah. At least, you know, through training camp, it seems to be a secondary issue, you know, in when it's in light of the drama taking place off the court. So that's an interesting, you know, juxtaposition there. But it's hard to know exactly where to fall on this, because you've got Bosch through his venue of the Uninterrupted and the blog post on his own personal website. But then you also have Riley kind of working through the media and explaining that he has made an attempt to contact the team. It's just, what's wrong here is that, again, and I hate to keep harping on this, is that clearly somebody's lying, you know? And it's just like, I don't know that we're ever going to find out the full truth of what's going on. Either Riley's going to be proven wrong, that Bosch is actually healthy enough to play, and he's going to join another team on Miami's expense, or, you know, Chris Bosch is perhaps slightly delusional, and I hate to say that about a player that we've admired so long over the last six seasons as a member of the Heat team, and even before that, let's be honest. I mean, he was a great player before that. So it's just very difficult to handle all this and to know where the fall on this. Like, I've had people ask me, you know, who do you think is lying, or what side are you on? And it's like, I don't want to take a side at all. As a Heat fan, you don't necessarily want to lean towards the front office or against a player. And I can understand from the player's perspective, as you've written about really eloquently recently, you know, you can understand why he wants to continue playing. This is something that has been a part of his life for 2+ decades. And he, you know, he doesn't want to be told what to do when it comes to his health and the decisions he can make as a human being. You know, we all have that right to decide how to move forward. But the team also has the right to say, look, well, we don't think that you're going to be ready enough to play and worth the $26 million that you're owed through our contract. We don't want to necessarily renege on our contract, but you're not going to be the type of player that we agreed to sign two seasons ago. And so that's a big blow to them. And I mean, it's just tough.
If you're a Heat fan, I mean, it's like, you know, you're witnessing a parent's divorce and you feel like you have to pick a side or something, but it's happening with Bosch and Pat Riley. But your parents have already gotten divorced. It's been Dwayne Wade and Pat Riley. Before that, it was LeBron James and the Heat organization. So it's like all three of your parents are getting divorced. Like, it's just like all of them are just getting divorced. And you're just like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? Whose side am I on? So, unfortunately, when it comes to Christmas time, we're not going to get, like, triple the presents or anything, but...
So, whose side are you on, Wes?
I mean, I really feel for Bosch. I mean, that's why I wrote that piece.
Sure.
I really feel for him. I mean, professional athletes are different in a way because they view all these hurdles as challenges, as just that, hurdles. Like, telling somebody you have a blood clot, it's just like telling them that you have an ACL tear. It's like, okay, well, I'll just rehab it, get back on the floor. Like, that's how these professional athletes are, you know, wired, is to look at, like, you told me, like, hey, you have a blood clot and you can't. I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm done. All right. I'll just stop playing. That's what most people, probably 99% of the population on the planet, would react that way. Like, it's life-threatening if you get on the court and play with blood thinners. You'd be like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. But if you're a professional athlete who has the drive and the motivation and the pride that it takes to get to Chris Bosh's level, it's just not the way you're wired to all of a sudden just be like, no, I'm just going to give up, I guess. Like, it's, right, as much as it sounds logical to you and I and everybody else, that's just not the way that these guys think. And so I do feel for Bosh in that way. I also feel that he's only 32 years old, and if you take, and all of a sudden this thing was take, what he does, like, his, the whole thing that he identifies with is just like, no, you can't do this anymore. Find something else to do with your life. At only 32 years old, like, that's hard. So I get why he wants to fight it. I also understand from the Heat's perspective that this is really difficult. Like, you, not only, it's not just an ACL tear. It's not somebody's in legal, you know, it's not a legal dispute or anything like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's this really touchy subject of this guy's, like, you know, rare medical condition. And I don't know, man, like, I kind of go back and forth, but honestly, like, I just don't want, to me, I think if you're Pat Riley and you're the organization, you could take some bad PR. That's fine. Like, you can handle it. Like, you're a huge company. You can, when it comes down to it, you're still going to be in Miami. You're still going to be the everybody's favorite team down here. Right. But
sure,
if you're Chris Bosh, like, getting it, you can only be dragged through the mud so much where his reputation is soiled in front of Heat fans. So that's why I always kind of go with Chris Bosh on this, or side with him at least, because I just, everything that he's provided this, the city and the team and the fans, I don't want that to be tainted with all of this. I don't want people to, you know, I don't want this backlash to hurt his reputation in the eyes of Heat fans. I want him to still hold that stature that he once held for his organization. I mean, you've talked about him a million times where, you know, the way LeBron left and then how Chris Bosh re-upped with the team that summer really elevated him, I think, in the minds of Heat fans as, you know, not just the third dude in the big three, not just the third wheel, like, right up there with Bosh right up there with Wade and LeBron and Haslam and Alonzo Mourning and all the great Heat players.
Right.
Like, he was right there after he re-upped, so I hate to see that go away because of this.
Yeah, no, I'm starting in agreement with you on that note. But, I mean, you did have some pretty scathing hot takes yesterday regarding Pat Riley and his effectiveness as a GM. And maybe you've cooled off a little bit, but that wasn't the case yesterday.
I was texting you, to be clear. That was not a podcast that went out, not a podcast. I think I'm – dude, I don't know, man. Like, you're baiting me with this
– Well, maybe it was just a little, you know, Saturday afternoon drinking or something like that, but you were pretty pissed off. I mean, maybe it was just a – blame it on the alcohol if you must. But, I mean, that was – you were pretty pissed off about Pat Riley there.
All right. You're baiting me.
Clearly. Clearly I am. Yeah, and it's great because you're pretty pissed off about it. I want our listeners to hear about, what you're thinking of Pat Riley's efficiency lately and whether or not he still has what it takes to be the Heat GM.
I don't know the answer to the last question, but I am getting a little annoyed with everybody saying that Riley is going to fix this, that Riley is going, despite everything that happened, look at the position that we're in, we could be a lot worse off. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't know if we can be a lot worse off, to be honest, because I think we're giving him too much credit. I don't want to say that he's washed or whatever, but I think that we're giving him too much credit and saying that we're in the best position possible after losing the big three. It's like, okay, I understand the extenuating circumstances, but each member of the big three left and you got nothing in return for them. I understand Bosh is weird. I understand that the whole Wade situation, like, you didn't want to pay Dwayne Wade the Kobe deal. I get that LeBron James wanted more power and that you couldn't give it to him, but we almost dismiss that. The LeBron James, like, oh, he wanted too much power. So he had no choice but to let him go. Now, but I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, maybe he should have just given LeBron the power that he wanted. Maybe he should have just given LeBron exactly what he wanted. Because look at where LeBron is now, and look where Riley is now. The Heat are poised to go into picking the lottery in 2 out of 3 years. Like, this is, and LeBron went to 2 straight NBA Finals with the Cavaliers. He didn't need Riley to get back to the finals, and he won a champ. He beat the Golden State Warriors last year. Like, it looks like whatever LeBron wanted, that might have been something that Riley should have just handed over. Because now, the whole argument was, that's not how the Heat operate. That's not how, but that's exactly what they're doing right now. If you believe the dark side of Riley, that he didn't want to give credit to Dwayne Wade, right? Or Dwayne Wade didn't get enough credit for helping assemble the big three in the first place. Or he felt, and now Bosch and Wade and LeBron, they all felt disrespected by Riley. Riley, it's not that Riley doesn't want one person to have control. It's that he wants to have the control. And to me, I'm just like, you should have just given that to LeBron, because he's way better off than you are right now. And they look poised to go to another finals. You know, they're dominating the Eastern Conference. They took your mm-hmm. they took your mantle, so to speak. And mm-hmm. and to me, I think that you let all those guys leave. While you had them, you didn't really draft anybody for the future. You didn't really you disregard draft picks in such a way where, and I've defended this for years, where he's a guy that goes and gets free agents, but when you're not able to go and get free agents and now you don't have any draft picks, then what are you left doing? Like, you're just left hoping that, you know, every other year that you have a draft pick, you're able to get a Justice Winslow in the draft. Or, you know, yeah, they were able to discover Hassan Whiteside, but a real great GM would have found Hassan Whiteside while you also had the big three. And you would have been able to add more youth and talent, just like the Spurs did with Kawhi Leonard. Like, you're able to manufacture one young player and you're able to keep Duncan and Ginobili and Parker in house while you're also able to build with guys like Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard and getting guys like that. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like we're giving him too much credit that he didn't really build a sustainable team. Like, this team isn't. I like the young players that we have, don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. I also think if Riley was as great as he was, they would have been in a better position. There would have been more foresight. To me, the Goran Dragic trade looks really hastily done now. Like, at the time, we all understood it. Like, the Heat were trying to gear up for a playoff run. I got it. But now this team doesn't have 2 first-round picks. And Riley's words himself is, we're not even retooling like we did before. We're rebuilding. Well, you can't really rebuild without 2 first-round picks. You just traded away 2 first-round picks. So to me, where we always gave Riley credit for having a master plan, it seems that there's no master plan anymore. Everything's hastily done or last minute or scrambling at the last minute. You know, Wade leaves and you're scrambling to re-sign Tyler Johnson, so you sign all these one-year deals or whatever. Like, everything just seems very hastily done to me. So this whole master plan, Godfather thing doesn't exist.
Where I feel like Riley has struggled lately is that ability to connect on a personal level and to gauge another human being correctly. Like, his gut instinct isn't proving to be correct, and that's the problem. As far as his overall ability to build a team, I gotta disagree with you. I think that he's done a really good job. I think as much as it sucks to see draft picks being traded away for a guy like Goran Dragic that, you know, both you and I are actually really high on,
right?
The reality is also, you don't necessarily want to have a lot of star players that are in the early parts of their career, because you're going to wind up being in a situation like Oklahoma City found themselves in a couple years ago, where they had to trade James Harden, or like now, where they had to choose between being able to re-sign Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant and had to trade Serge Ibaka, or even years ago when, you know, Donald Sterling had to choose between Elton Brand, Corey Maggette, or Lamar Odom and wound up losing Odom to the Heat. You know, you don't want to be in that position where you have so many high draft picks that, you know, their rookie deals all end within consecutive years, and you're going to have to force somebody away anyways, or you're going to have to trade them away like, you know, like a restricted free agent before they enter restricted free agency, or else you risk getting nothing in return.
So you don't want to be in that situation? You'd rather be in Miami's situation where, like, hopefully you get them on that second contract or third contract?
I think you find players of better value, guys like Josh Richardson and Hassan Whiteside and even Tyler Johnson. I mean, look, I guess they put ultimate faith in their ability to scout players and say that they're going to take that level. The draft isn't necessarily the best place to find a good player anymore. If you're going to wind up signing them to huge free agent deals a la Whiteside or Johnson, the reality is, what's the difference between finding them in the lottery or finding them, you know, in the D-League or as an unsigned player? Either way, you're going to coach them up and develop them.
Well, you're not
going to
find the next Dwayne Wade in the D-League. Like, those players are... Those are the guys who...
You're not going to find the next Dwayne Wade anyway.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, you're not going to find the next franchise player in the D-League. Like, you're going to...
But you're not. I mean, but how likely is that you're going to find a franchise player on a yearly basis? I mean, look, we're looking at Justice Winslow as a really, really good player who could possibly continue a 15, 16-year career as an arguably a great defender. Maybe possibly a decent shooter or eventually and a playmaker. And he still was chosen 10th overall and possibly could have been selected in a top four pick. Conversely, you have a guy like Dion Waiters who was signed, you know, who was drafted 4th overall, and he may not have a career beyond next season if he can't prove something with Miami this year. So, I mean, the lottery is that, you know, it's a gamble and it doesn't necessarily pay off. And if you go in there expecting to find Dwayne Wade, well, that's not really going to happen. I mean,
I think my argument is that there's just no, what's the plan? Like, I just want to know what the plan is, because to me that doesn't seem to be one. And that
I think the plan is to move forward with the players that are currently on the roster and hope that you can sign a free agent in the future. And I think that's always been the case. I think you've got your core right now of Winslow, Richardson, and Whiteside. You continue to add Dragic unless you don't value him anymore and you think you can trade him for something else. And then you hope that you can get Bosch's contract off the books so that you can sign another superstar free agent or two over the next couple seasons.
I think that's the plan. I don't see the evidence of why they could do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a risk involved, but I mean, there is just as much a risk, if not more so, of counting on possibly being bad enough so that you can fall into the lottery in the hope that you might be able to find a player that may or may not turn your franchise around. When you look at it from that perspective, I continue to expand my coverage of the league, and as I talk to other players who are fans of other teams, I mean, other writers that are fans of other teams, you know, the reality is that they see the draft a lot differently than we do here in South Florida. And I don't know that I necessarily, you know, agree or think that the draft is worth as much anymore. And you know, to me, I'd rather have a guy like Dragic than two draft picks that you're going to wind up paying more than Dragic, who may or may not be that good anyway. So I just don't see the overall value of it.
Well, it only works if... To me, I just... My problem with Riley is that it's either you sign a free agent or you're bust. Like, it would be nice if you had both options, if you had draft picks to use and be able to lure free agents. Like, to me, it's just, a good GM has options, I just feel like he doesn't have options anymore.
Well, he's got young players anyway, though. I mean, can't you say that you could sign a free agent now who wants an elite level shot blocker like, you know, Hassan Whiteside, or an elite level perimeter defender like Justice Winslow, and a future up and coming athletic wing like Josh Richardson?
I don't know who's going to sign with that team. Like, Blake Griffin's not going to sign with the Heat. Like, if it's between that and LA, like, he would stay in LA. Like, I don't know.
Well, why? Well, why? If you're replacing DeAndre Jordan with a younger, better version of him, say, in Whiteside, and CP3 is, you know, towards the end of his career, and you're making a decision on where you're going to be over the next 5 years, and you can't win it there, and you're tired of the constant scrutiny, whatever. I mean, let's just say it's a possibility that he may no longer want to play the Clippers.
Like, I hope Riley proves me wrong and he's able to lure another free agent. I just, like I said, he hasn't done it by himself since 2003. He hasn't lured a free agent by himself since 2003. That's a fact. He's always had a way to help him otherwise.
Yeah, it's. I mean, look, you could say that the only reason Shaquille O'Neal argued, you know, or agreed to a trade in 2004 was based on the performance of Wade in the 2003 and 2004
playoffs.
Well,
you don't have to say it. It's absolutely true.
He's
said as much. All right. Well, continuing along with plans and conspiracy theories, Kendrick Perkins mentioned on Adrian Wojnarowski's podcast on The Vertical that he knew about the lunch, the quote unquote famous lunch that LeBron, Wade, and Bosch had back in 2014, and said that that was when LeBron told Wade and Bosch that he was planning and definitely going back to Cleveland.
Yeah, to add a little bit more to that, Kendrick Perkins, you know, spent last season with the Cleveland Cavaliers as a free agent, and obviously that was you know, LeBron was talking and a little bit open about what had happened during the breakup of the big three. And I guess he had revealed at that point that he had had lunch with Wade and Bosch prior to the formal announcement coming via Sports Illustrated and, you know, Lee Jenkins. And he had already informed them about his decision. And so there's a lot of conspiracy to tie into that, because there was even a visit from Riley to Las Vegas. There was the opportunity for Riley to court other free agents, knowing that LeBron wasn't going to sign there. You know, LeBron and Wade spent time together as friends in Vegas and then flew across country back to Miami. So there's a lot that ties into that if it's true. And there's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be, to be honest with you. I mean, I believe Perkins inherently, don't you?
There's no reason for him to lie about it. I mean, right. It is weird that he knows. Like, I just, like, what did LeBron
why?
Just,
why
like,
do you think it's weird?
Like, when did LeBron tell him that? Like, did they just get, like, drunk on some too much Cabernet one night and were like, you want to hear something gray about 2014? Like, I don't, like, that to me is weird that Perkins knows. But I don't, like, that's just a weird thing. Like, I don't think he's making it up. You know, I don't think that he doesn't know and he's just making something up out of thin air. There's no reason for him to do that. But I absolutely agree. I agree with Perkins because he has no reason to lie about that. Number two,
sure.
That we know about. Number two, it kind of verifies a suspicion we all had in the first place. You know, and I guess the real question is, what's the significance of it? I mean, a lot of people when they found this out on Twitter, on Heat Twitter, were like, "Oh, this is so screwed up! Like, I can't believe all this. The smiling faces, hidden agendas thing," and it's like. To me, I'm like, if you're Dwayne Wade and you're Chris Bosh, you're sitting across the table from LeBron James and he delivers this news to you, all of a sudden you are in a very difficult position. Because mm-hmm. at right at that moment, unbeknownst to you, you are going to betray somebody. You're going to betray the organization by not telling them ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to betray your best friend, LeBron James, who just confided in you with this information. If you are Wade and Bosh, that's a really tough situation to be in. I don't think it's as black and white as people are making it out to be. That to say, oh, they played for the Heat, they should have told Pat Riley right then and there.
Well, even moreover, then there's a chance then that they could betray themselves as well. I mean, look at what happened with Dwayne Wade. He arguably wound up costing himself a big chunk of change by opting out of his contract and taking less money, at least in that first year. You know, for Bosch, it worked out, but what if they had come back to the franchise at that point, Riley specifically, and said, look, man, he's gone. What's Riley's next step? Does he throw as much money at Wade and Bosch as possible, or does he just elect for a full-on rebuild, or right. Does he call another free agent in 2014? I can't recall now. Well, Kyle Lowry, maybe he throws more money at Lowry. I'm struggling to think who else were the top free agents at the time. I remember Pau Gasol theoretically mm-hmm. being an option for Miami at that time. Does he try to lure him here, you know, knowing that Bosch is going to go elsewhere? Does he make that same kind of money? Does he feel obligated to pay Bosch that money, knowing that LeBron has actively tried to, you know, sabotage the team and their free agent efforts? Does he feel, you know, held victim by Henry Thomas, Chris Bosch's agent, when Thomas reports that he's going to be signed to a max deal by Houston? Or does Riley just say, let him go get your max deal then? I don't care. We're going to rebuild and try and add other players. You know, they go after Luol Deng anyway. Does he add, you know, Josh McRoberts to the team?
Right.
Does he add Danny Granger? Maybe the team is built differently. Maybe he doesn't try to acquire Goran Dragic. There's so much to it, you know.
Right.
It was a big step there, the first domino to fall, and it's hard to understand again what the player should have done. You know, who's right or wrong. I mean, it does seem a little messed up. Let's be honest with you. There's clearly a lack of communication. They don't share the same alignment. They don't share the same vision as to what to do.
It was messed up on LeBron's part, absolutely. Like to have a decision made and then eke it out for as long as he did. Like, I get it. Like, LeBron, maybe it wasn't as personal of a shot to Riley as maybe we think, and maybe even seems, right? Maybe it's this is LeBron standing on the principle that he stood on his entire for so long of his career, was I'm the player, I'm my business. Like, I don't owe anybody else anything. I'm going to take 1 year deals. I'm going to sign a $1 billion contract with Nike. Like, I'm going to take care of me first, because I honestly don't get paid my market value in the first place. So I don't owe this organization anything. To a degree, he's right.
But, he is absolutely right.
But I also understand, like, all right, like, that's just kind of, like, screwed up as a person. Like, to to have a decision made and then not tell the organization. Like,
is it though? I mean, that's
you're right. Like,
thing.
I'm arguing with myself. You're right. It's not really.
It's so hard for us. I keep having this argument with myself. And again, this is something that's changed. Look, I'll be the first to tell you that in 2003, when Alonzo Mourning and his bad kidney wanted to extort, and I use that word because that's how I felt at the time, wanted to extort Pat Riley for a 4-year deal, I told Zoe to go screw himself, you know, not to his face, obviously, because he's 6'10 and weighs, you know, 250 pounds. But, you know, I was pretty pissed off about it. And this is a guy who was the Heat lifer before Wade, et cetera. You know, he was a guy that totally symbolized Heat culture, the warrior. I mean, everything that you like about the Heat and the Heat front office and organization and everything else, he was symbolic of that. And here he was in 2003. After 3 seasons or, you know, 3 years basically of him not really being able to play at a high level, not being a factor at all. And he chose to go to the New Jersey Nets at that point for 4 years and $20-something million. That was ridiculous. I remember that was one of the first things I ever wrote in a letter to Slam Magazine saying, you know, that Zoe doesn't bleed red and black, that he bleeds green because all he cared about was money. It was weak as hell, but it was one of the first things I ever wrote. And it was just so pissed off. That. No, I doubt it. I was so pissed off about it that it really inspired me to write something about it. And you know, I was pretty pissed off. But looking back now, it's like, you know, these players, they do have the right to choose what they want to do for themselves. And you know, the thing is, we all think as fans that there should be this sense of community and a shared vision and goal, et cetera. But look, I mean, it doesn't happen in our own lives. We're all struggling against our bosses.
Right.
We all hate the places we work for.
If you had decided that wherever you're the company that you work for, you're and all of a sudden that there's another better situation for you, and you decide, okay, I'm going to pursue that situation, are you going to automatically just go to your boss's boss and be like, hey, you know, just so that you could prepare for whatever it is that you need to do, I'm going to go to the rival marketing company or whatever it is that like of course you don't do that. Like, who in the world does that? Like, you limit your own options at that point because all of a sudden you don't get that job or it doesn't work out and they fire you or they never look at you the same.
Or if you don't tell – if you tell your friend that you're thinking of going, that friend's not going to go to the boss's boss and be like, hey, you know, I just hear that this guy's leaving, so you may want to prepare yourself
never
for
do that. Exactly. So it's hard.
Because what you do then is you hope that when that guy leaves the company and leaves the company in a lurch – then you get compensated because of the all of a sudden you've got this void there, and you do what Chris Bosh did, which is get paid a whole hell of a lot of money. Exactly. I mean, it makes total sense.
It does.
And we hate to admit that as fans, but that's the reality. These people are human beings, and it's very difficult for us to you know, picture them in that way, but that's the reality. And there's always going to be a problem between employee and employer.
That's right. There's an inherent disconnect there, right? They want different things.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think one thing that does bother me, and I don't want to keep harping on this, is that there's and you already said it, like, there's obviously some sort of disconnect between Riley and the players. Like, for a team that went to 4 straight finals, for LeBron to want to leave for whatever reasons that he did, which is myriad of reported reasons, and for Wade to all of a sudden feel unwanted in a region that calls itself Wade County is just incredible to me. And just like this whole messy Chris Bosh situation. I mean, we're going to keep finding out more. Like, 3 years later, or 2 years later, we found out that Kendrick Perkins came out and told us about the lunch. Like, this is something that can, years into the future, we can keep getting bits of information from. But, all right. That's all we have for the show today, and whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions and comments. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Big thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show, and a big thanks to David for joining me.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll catch you next time.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.